Hello, everyone. Welcome to It's a Bronx Story,
a podcast by two lifelong Yankee fans about all things Yankees and a fun twist at the end of each episode.
All right, I just wanted to start by mentioning that I know our uploads have been a little bit less frequent so far in the offseason, and that's just because Jatinder and I work pretty busy jobs, especially towards the end of the year and the beginning of every new year. So we're just working on trying to figure out a schedule that works for us to get things uploaded a little bit more regularly. And coupled with the fact that there hasn't really been a ton of big offseason news for the Yankees yet, but trust us, if something huge happens, there will be an episode about it very shortly after. But just know that we're working on trying to get some more consistent uploads for you guys. Now, going into this episode, we just obviously want to start by mentioning the Braves World Series win, along with the qualifying offers and what surprised us about those, the Rule 5 deadline, the 40-man crunch, and this year's Hall of Fame ballot. And as always, if you enjoy this episode, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, check us out on Twitter and Instagram at The Bronx Story. We'd love to hear from you guys. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the seventh inning stretch. So join us now for Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Ladies and gentlemen, he who breaks the rules goes back to the house of pain.
All right, guys. So as we all know, the Braves were the World Series champions this year, beating out the Astros, right? Am I remembering correctly? Yeah. It's been a while. Obviously, I think for most of baseball fans, that was the outcome that everyone wanted for those two World Series teams. I guess I'll just ask you, Jatinder, what were your thoughts on the World Series this year?
I thought it was really great. You know, when we last recorded, it looked like it was going to be Red Sox, Braves, although we kind of thought the Braves might choke at the end, you know, just because they, you know, Braves and, you know, Georgia sports just have a history of just blowing it. But I was really shocked and surprised, but happy with the Braves winning.
Yeah, I mean, don't need to spend a ton of time talking about it, but I think I share the same sentiment, really. It's much better to see the Braves win than the Astros, so I'm not gonna complain about that. And I mean, it was cool to see how well, like, Freddie Freeman had a couple timely home runs and big plays in the World Series, which I'm sure for Atlanta sports fans, that's like Derek Jeter hitting clutch home runs, or now Aaron Judge. So I'm just happy for them. I remember in the 90s. Well, obviously I was very young for most of it, or not alive, but I know a lot about when the Braves were great but couldn't win anything. So now that they were the underdogs, and I don't think anyone really expected them to win except a few people like Trevor Plouffe, who predicted in the beginning of the year. But going into the World Series, I don't think many people thought they would win, but they managed to pull it out. And congrats to them. So I guess we can move that into the offseason news. And I think the big thing in the offseason, a lot of qualifying offers. Obviously, there were some expected, like everyone expected Justin Verlander to decline, Corey Seager, things like that. And then Brandon Belt accepted, which I think a lot of people kind of saw that coming with how many big name free agents are out there. This like Freddie Freeman, Anthony Rizzo, you have some of those big names, along with the free agent market for first basemen, I don't think has been all too great. So I think he just took his luck with accepting the qualifying offer, as that would probably be the best offer that he'd get. But then Jatinder, I can let you bring up some of the ones that you thought were more surprising.
I was going to say the worst, asset management was the Rockies with John Gray. They held on to him at trade deadline, they kept Trevor Story as well, gave him a qualifying offer, didn't give John Gray a qualifying offer, which I thought was really shocking. You know, they're going to just let him leave for nothing now. And I think he I think he's an interesting, you know, free agent candidate. You know, I think he's the kind of guy where teams will take a look at and be like, he could be this year's Robbie Ray, where you're like, he has the tools, just give a couple fixes and he'll be really good. And then, yeah,
I agree. Yeah.
And then the second one I was kind of shocked by was Clayton Kershaw. The Dodgers didn't give him a qualifying offer, which I just thought was just shocking to me. Like, you know, I don't expect him to leave the Dodgers, but just not even hedging your bets, just give him a qualifying offer. I thought he's injured right now, but I still think he gets as much money, especially if you look at Verlander's market.
Yeah, and I think the deal there must have been that they have something worked out. Like, for the Dodgers to just give up on Clayton Kershaw like that, that just wouldn't happen. So, maybe with all the moves they've made, and there are rumors that they're still going for Corey Seager in free agency. So, like, maybe Clayton Kershaw is just going to take a big discount and stay with the Dodgers and help out their payroll. But, I mean, we'll find out. I doubt he's going to leave LA. That would shock me if he did.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't think there were too many crazy qualifying offer moves, but
I think
a lot. Yeah.
I was going to say the Mets kind of had some interesting qualifying moves. They they had Syndergaard. Verlander was a no shocker to give him a qualifying offer, but you know, I was waiting to see if the Mets would offer Conforto or Syndergaard a qualifying offer, and they gave both a qualifying offer.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, and the funny thing with Syndergaard is you would think someone that hasn't pitched in as long as he has, he would just accept the $18 million, but he didn't, and said that he can't imagine not being a Met or something along those lines, then proceeds to go to the Angels, who used to have the GM that the Mets just hired. So that's just kind of funny all around that
happened. The same day, right? I think, or within a span of like 24 hours, it happened. Definitely. So it was crazy.
Yeah, and obviously we saw Justin Verlander sign for $25 million. So declining his was expected, but turned out well for him. I think that's mainly it for the qualifying offers. Did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about?
No, that was it for qualifying offers.
So I guess we can move to the Rule 5 deadline and like the 40-man crunch that a lot of teams were facing following all this. And I know with the Yankees in particular, we were hearing rumors all week that this was going to be the week the Yankees were going to make a big trade. Mm-hmm. And all the rumors were pointing to Matt Olson. Obviously, that didn't work out, but I wanted to know how you were feeling all throughout the week with all the rumors that were buzzing around.
Yeah, I mean, I've been hearing it, was getting excited, but I kept texting. I was like, I'm going to downplay it until, you know, something happens. But I was getting excited. It made sense to me that maybe something was brewing, you know, like you want to open up spots. Let's try to trade some guys before, you know, we're in that crunch, but nothing kind of materialized. I think now that I'm thinking about it, maybe the non-tender deadline might be a day you look forward to just to see if any moves are going to be made, because, you know, you have Luke Voit, Andujar, Sanchez are like kind of the big, you know, non-tender candidates. So maybe if we see a move made before then, I don't know. But I was shocked that they didn't make a move. I just thought it just made the most sense.
Yeah, and I mean, there's obviously still time in the offseason to make a trade for someone like Matt Olson, but I think a lot of people are hoping it would be for prospects that we'd otherwise lose in the Rule 5, but it didn't happen. And we ended up, let's see if I can remember all of them. We cut Clint Frazier, Tyler Wade, Rougned Odor. Nick Nelson.
And then Jerry Sands in that same trade.
Yeah. So we lost Clint, which it's tough to see. Like, I liked Clint, and he obviously has a ton of potential, but with all of the head injuries that he had, it was just like we were stuck between a rock and a hard place because you don't want to just get rid of a guy like that for nothing, but he doesn't have a ton of value because he hasn't been able to play consistently.
It's tough to see, but it made sense. I thought he was going to be non-tendered. So if you have the crunch, you know, just do it now. But I was surprised they didn't consider just releasing Zach Britton to open up a spot.
I don't know why they didn't do that. A lot of people are thinking they were going to do that. Also, who's Chris Gittens? I don't know why we kept him over Clinton Frazier, or Tyler Wade, either one.
Yeah.
It just doesn't really make sense because Chris Gittens isn't really good. Like, he hits the ball far when he hits it, but that's when he hits it, and he's not really good at defense. And we have plenty of other people that can play first base.
Yeah. So. I was shocked too. You know, I figured, you know, I think Tyler Wade was probably the biggest shocker for me just because he could play all over the place. And then now he's just showing some flashes of potential, you know, just hitting well. He's always fast, so you always like that off the bench anyways. But the fact that he could play, you know, all over the infield, even play the outfield here and there. So I just thought I like his versatility. So kind of shocked that they moved on from him before they got rid of, you know, Gittens. And then Frazier, like I said, I thought he would be non-tendered only because, you know, all his injuries, and then he's in for a raise anyways. So would the Yankees even want to pay that? Probably not.
Yeah, and like, I would have honestly, I think I would have rather seen them part ways with Andujar over Tyler Wade because, like, Andujar can still hit, maybe. Like, we don't even know that for sure, but he can't field. Like, there's, Tyler Wade can play, what, like, five positions? Andujar can't even play one. Yeah. It's not like Andujar is going to start anywhere. So yeah. I don't really get it.
I mean, unless you're banking on, you know, the NL having a DH and maybe that opens up a possibility, but that seems like, cheap. I don't know. I rather keep, if, you know, in a vacuum, definitely I'd rather keep Wade over Andujar.
Yeah, but we ended up trading Wade, so at least we got something for him. Player to be named later, who will probably never amount to anything, but we'll see. As a flip side to that, the Yankees added Oswaldo Cabrera, Ron Marnicio, I think. I always forget how to pronounce his name. Everson Pereira, Steven Ridings, and J.P. Sears, which, I mean, Oswaldo Cabrera is the most obvious. Well, also, Pereira. I never know how to say his last name either. And we saw Steven Ridings a little bit last year who looked electric. So maybe more to look forward to there. And J.P. Sears, I actually saw pitch in Scranton Wilkes-Barre, and he seems like he has the tools to be a pretty solid, like, 3 or 4 starter at some point. So I think he's a lefty, so that always helps.
Yeah.
But yeah, nothing crazy or shocking with those moves.
I would expect both pitchers to be coming out of the bullpen if you see them this year. That's probably...
I'd imagine J.P. Sears will just be at AAA most of the year unless we have some insane injury bug that he needs to come up.
Yeah.
And I mean, some of the people we lost to Rule 5 or may lose, I believe it was Brandon Lockridge, which is a pitcher. That was a little surprising. He's been looking pretty good. Josh Bro, who's a catcher. I mean, that one's that one wasn't really shocking.
Yeah.
And I think everyone else was kind of just eh.
Yeah. I thought the only one that kind of got me was Lockridge, just because he's a pitcher. And then, like, obviously we saw what happened with Garrett Whitlock. You know, I'm not expecting him to be, you know, that, but still sucks when our farm system gets picked off every Rule 5 pick and then they seem to do awesome somewhere else.
Yeah, I think Steven Ridings is the person. If anyone's going to be a Garrett Whitlock, it's going to be him. So
yep.
I'm glad we kept him. But I mean, as a Yankees fan, it's been a disappointing offseason so far. Nothing crazy has happened like we have hoped. And with the lockout or the new CBA deadline at December 1st, I don't think we're going to see anything happen for a while.
Yeah. I mean, there was moves, just none by the Yankees. You know, Tigers signed Eduardo Rodriguez, which I really like for them. Yeah. I thought that's a really great signing. You know, gives them a veteran presence. They have a lot of young pitchers. So even though Rodriguez is young himself, you know, he has experience. I think he'll definitely offer something to their pitchers. And then also just, you know, I think getting out of the AL East will help him, putting him in a nice pitcher's ballpark, because I think he has potential, you know, a lefty. But the Yankees, it's a shame for the Yankees because we always beat up against Erod.
I feel like he always pitched well against us.
Really? I think he has recently. Like a five. Maybe this year, but like usually he has like a five ERA. And then, that's the thing. This year, you're right. He did, because he would come into the games and we're like, oh, he has a five ERA. We should smack him around. And then he'll throw up seven shutout innings.
Yeah. And then the Blue Jays signed Berrios, to an extension, which I think is a great move for them with the AAV that it's at. It's kind of a
win-win. 7 years, $130 million, somewhere around there. A little less than $20 million per year.
Yeah, so he gets the guaranteed money, and the Blue Jays get a low-risk contract for a pitcher that could turn out, like, could be very good. So we'll see how that works out. Trying to think of any other, like Syndergaard signed with the Angels, we mentioned. Verlander with the Astros.
Sandy Alcantar today just signed a extension, which was really nice. I always say for pitchers, like, always sign those extensions because you never know. You know, look at Severino, at, you know, Harvey, how his career just turned out. Like, you never know what's going to happen either. You just lose it or you get injured. Just take the money now. I'm kind of risk adverse. So I'm just like, take the money now and then, you know, it'll be fine.
I mean, it could turn out to be an amazing contract for the Marlins, but that's the sort of thing that they need.
I mean, I think the Marlins are definitely building towards something. Their rotation is nasty. So we'll see. I think they definitely need hitters, but I think they're building towards something.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's a lot of the moves that's happened in the offseason so far. And we'll
Just now, Anthony DeGasperi signed a three-year, $36 million contract with the Giants just now.
DeGasperi?
Yeah, however you pronounce it.
I mean, good for him. I
mean, he had a great year last year. Yeah. You know, the Giants had a lot of reclamation projects that just turned out well. So I'm kind of interested to see who will be this year's, you know, them.
So, something we haven't even mentioned. Buster Posey.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
On the Giants train of thought, Buster Posey retiring was a big shock for a lot of people. Great career.
Do you think he's a Hall of Famer? We're going to talk about the Hall of Fame, but you think he's a Hall of Famer?
Yeah. He's definitely one of the better catchers.
I think so too.
I can think of.
I don't know if they're going to make it first ballot, but I think, you know, he'll get there eventually.
What? Three rings? Four rings now?
Three rings. They didn't win this year.
Oh, God. I don't know why I was thinking they did. Brain fart. But, yeah, three rings. He's a great offensive catcher. He had numerous great defensive years, so he should be.
I mean, MVP, Rookie of the Year, all those rings, you know, been a leader. Yeah. I think, you know, the only thing that might hurt him is just, you know, longevity. But I think his peak definitely gets him in there.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of the moves that have happened in the offseason. And we're going to make another episode about kind of the what we want the Yankees offseason to look like for the rest of the year, or the rest of the offseason, because we could talk about that for a while. And I also just thought of all of the awards. But I think we could do an episode, because Jatinder and I did predictions at the beginning of the year where we predicted every award, all the standings. So we could just have a whole episode going over that and what our predictions were and what the reality was, and talk about the awards then. So I think now we want to go ahead to the Hall of Fame ballot for this year and just talk about some of the big names and what we think is going to happen.
Yeah.
All right. So I think we can start with the fact that this is Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, and Curt Schilling's last year on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is going to be the outcome of those
three? Out of those three, I think Schilling gets in. He was at 70%, 71% last time. Yeah, so I think he gets pushed up to the 75 mark and makes it to the Hall of Fame. I do think Clemens and Bonds are Hall of Famers. I don't think they make it. I don't think they make it.
The fact that Barry Bonds isn't going to be a Hall of Famer is a joke. Everyone understands he took steroids, but everyone was taking steroids and no one was even close to him.
Yeah.
It sucks. He would have been a Hall of Famer if he didn't take steroids,
mm-hmm.
but he did. So
same thing with Clemens. I think he was a Hall of Famer before he even touched steroids. And I mean, it's hard to tell the story of baseball without those two guys. You know, they're the two of the best players to play the game, and you're going to not have them there. It's kind of weird.
Barry Bonds is the single-handedly the most dominant player in baseball history. There's nobody that dominated baseball to the level that he did. But oh well, the voters are going to vote the way they are.
What was his on-base percentage that year? 500, 600?
No, six something.
That's insane. Yeah. Not even swinging a bat, just taking just all walks would have still been amazing. So, it's
ridiculous. And Curt Schilling is the person I would hope wouldn't make it just because he's an awful person. But, that's not on the baseball field. He's mm-hmm. probably going to get elected to the Hall of Fame because he's a pretty damn good baseball player.
Yeah.
And then some other people worth mentioning that are just returning. Torrey Hunter. Andy Pettit, Manny Ramirez, Andrew Jones, Gary Sheffield, Todd Helton, Billy Wagner. A lot of those players are like Gary Sheffield is probably not ever going to make it. Andrew Jones, insanely good at defense, but I just don't know if his offense was good enough.
Yeah. I mean, if you looked at his first 10 years of his career, you're like, oh, he's a Hall of Famer. It's just, you know, he just really fell off, which just sucks. I know I said peak, but I think a lot of guys are going to hold that against him where they're like his production just didn't hold up. You know, he had an awesome first 10 years and then just fell off.
Yeah, I think Torrey Hunter is the same, but in an even more extreme case, his offense, I want to say just wasn't even as good as Andrew Jones.
Yeah, I don't think so. I want to see their career because I think Torrey Hunter might have better counting stats, but it's kind of just because he played for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But his defense was definitely god tier.
A career OPS of 793.
Okay.
And 26 or 50 career WAR. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be able to get it done.
Yeah. Hall of really good though.
Yeah.
He was one of my favorite players watching, you know.
I think Andy Pettit, Gary Sheffield, they all go in that hall very good. And then Manny Ramirez mm-hmm. is going to suffer the same fate most likely as Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. Well, he is. Yeah.
His case is even more just because he has those two failed. So even if you get, you know, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, maybe that's a good sign that maybe Ramirez gets in, but he also has the failed test. So they could always be like, oh, well, you never know for sure if they were taking it, right?
Yeah.
You know, for sure. Ramirez was taking it, especially when it was very clear that it was banned.
Yep. I mean, and the guy had a career OPS of 996 and 555 home runs. If he didn't take steroids, he's easily definitely a Hall of Famer, but he did, so he's probably mm-hmm. not gonna make it. And I don't think anyone else on this list is really gonna make any crazy. Maybe some of them will sneak in, but I don't know. So
I mean, I think the only one maybe is Omar Vizquel, but even then I don't think he's gonna sneak in. The only ones, Billy Wagner, defensive maybe. Wizard.
Yeah, Billy Wagner,
but I think he's still a couple years away from getting elected. You know, other than Mo, you know, relievers are just kind of hard to get in there. Todd Helton, I think, has kind of same thing with Larry Walker, just has the Coors effect to kind of deal with. Yeah. But I think he's really solid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then for the new Hall of Famers, I'll just read off the list really quick. Mm-hmm. Carl Crawford, Prince Fielder, Ryan Howard, Tim Lincecum, Justin Morneau, Joe Nathan. Wow. David Ortiz, Jonathan Papelbon, Jake Peavy, AJ Pierzynski, Jimmy Rollins, and then A-Rod and Mark Teixeira.
Okay, so, let's start with the two big names out of everyone you named there. So I think it would be A-Rod and David Ortiz.
Oh, I was thinking Carl Crawford and Jake Peavy.
Okay.
Well, yeah, okay. So I'll start with Ortiz and Alex Rodriguez. I think Ortiz definitely 100% is going to make the Hall of Fame.
Do you think he gets in first ballot? Like it's so he also has his steroid, you know, cloud.
But they never got to the bottom of it.
Yeah, he never got to the bottom of it. I think he's still trying to find out for us. So we'll wait and see. But I don't think he's so. I don't know. I could see him being a first ballot, but the fact that Edgar Martinez faced like kind of an uphill battle as a DH trying to get in there, that would lead me to think that maybe Ortiz takes a few years before he's in the Hall of Fame, but I think he does make it to the Hall of Fame. But David Ortiz was also well liked and he has the World Series rings, so maybe he's a first ballot.
Yeah, I was thinking if he gets first ballot, it's because of who he is, not mm-hmm. how good he was. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, he was better. I mean, Edgar Martinez had a lot more war.
Yeah.
But Ortiz was a much better hitter.
I mean, look at Ortiz's postseason. I think that definitely carries like a lot of weight in it, you know?
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't think it's a slight to be like, oh, if you're a first ballot Hall of Famer, second ballot, or you may are on your last, now it's 10 years before you used to be 15 years. Like, I don't see a difference between that, honestly.
I think there's a difference between first ballot and anything else. But after you get past first ballot, then I don't think there's really much of a difference.
I mean, you're a Hall of Famer. I mean, there's upper echelon, like, you know, Babe Ruth, Willie Mays, like, you know that. But, like, you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer.
Like, you know that, like, Mo is always mm-hmm. going to be enshrined as being mm-hmm. unanimous mm-hmm. and, like, stuff like that. But, yeah, Ortiz will be a Hall of Famer at some point. Mm-hmm. A-Rod, I don't think he will
I think his stats, it's kind of like with Manny Ramirez where his stats prove it, but he also has the suspension. Like, even if Bonds and Clemens get in, which would kind of make you think he has a better shot than he does, but he also has the failed suspension on his record, which I think kind of torpedoes his chances.
Yeah. And then, I mean, after that,
a lot of really solid players like Ryan Howard, like Tim Lincecum, like guys that I don't think make it, but guys that, you know, you remember playing and you like have fond memories of just like watching them.
Yeah. Play. So like just going through the list of who I definitely don't think will make it, like Carl Crawford, definitely not. Prince Fielder, mm-hmm. Ryan Howard, Tim Lincecum, Jake Peavy, AJ mm-hmm. Pierzynski, all of them definitely not off the top of my head. The people I think could have a chance, I need to look more into their stats. Justin Morneau, Joe Namath, Papelbon.
Joe Namath again.
Oh my God, Joe Nathan. Jonathan Papelbon, Jimmy Rollins, and Mark Teixeira. I don't think Mark Teixeira will make it. I mean, I don't think any of them will make it, but
yeah.
If Billy Wagner doesn't make it, Joe Namath definitely isn't going to make it.
Nathan.
Oh my God. Nathan. Joe Nathan definitely isn't going to make it if Billy Wagner doesn't.
Yeah. I think Mark Teixeira has a case, but I think he falls short. Joe Nathan, I need to look at it more. Jonathan Papelbon, I think, has a better shot than Joe Nathan, just from what I remember, just because I remember him being a lot better. But maybe I'm wrong. I have to look through the stats again. If I remember Papelbon for anything, it's choking Bryce Harper. But
Yeah, I mean, his Philly years were pretty good. He had a year of, crazy though. Career ERA of what? 2.44. I mean, that's pretty good.
I mean, I remember when he came up as a rookie in like 2007. I remember I went to a game. I went to, or maybe it was 2006. I
think it was 2005 was his rookie year.
How many?
2006 was his first full year.
Okay, so I think it was 2006. I remember just watching him. Yeah, he had a 0.92 ERA. That's definitely the year I was thinking. So because it was the year he was just coming up and he was just dominating. I remember I went to a Yankee Red Sox game right by the bullpen and everyone was just cursing at him and the way he was reacting, he was he doesn't fucking care. He loved it. He loves getting cursed at and that's, I don't know, he just likes riling up the crowd, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, but looking at his stats, I just don't think he really has the counting stats to make it as a reliever. He was good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's gonna be tough. And then I looked at Justin Morneau's stats a little bit more. Yeah, definitely not. He's he has 27 career WAR.
He'll always have that home run derby over Josh Hamilton. Do you remember he even won that?
Yes, kind of.
I mean, because everyone thinks Josh Hamilton won that just because he went off in the semifinals, yep. But it was Morneau that won. Yeah.
And then I mean, looking at Jimmy Rollins' stats, I don't really think he's got it either. 47 career WAR with pretty average, almost a 95 OPS plus, so pretty, almost dead on average. And then he played good defense, but
Rollins, I mean, shortstop, speedy guy. I mean, he won an MVP, which I still don't think he deserved that MVP, but that's another time, but. A solid career. I don't think a Hall of Famer. Just Hall of really good for me.
Yeah. I mean, the year he won MVP, Albert Pujols was just way better. Yeah. I mean, Albert Pujols finished 9th in MVP voting that year.
Yeah.
With the highest WAR in the league. So that's before WAR was really a thing, evidently. But
I mean, I think it was because the Cardinals didn't make the playoffs and that also got into the voting.
I think because they didn't have WAR, it was harder for them to judge value. So they're oh, you're not in the playoffs. So.
Well, the Phillies had that crazy stretch. They had the Mets obviously collapsed. So that narrative played into it as well. But yeah, I thought Pujols deserved it.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think the only people really with a chance are Ortiz, A-Rod, and Mark Teixeira. And I don't think Mark Teixeira will get it, but he has a chance. Yeah. I don't think anyone else really even has a chance.
Yeah. So I guess if there's going to be a Hall of Fame, someone get voted in the Hall of Fame, it would be Curt Schilling. I could see maybe potentially Vizquel, just like I said before, maybe squeaking in. Billy Wagner maybe squeaking in. But I really do think the only slam dunk Hall of Famer right now is Curt Schilling.
Which is crazy if we had – I don't wonder how often it is that you only have one Hall of Famer.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we'll get two Boston guys with, Ortiz and Schilling, which might be fitting, have the, curse breakers just getting voted in at the same time. Maybe that would be a nice story, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap it up. I think that was a lot of stuff. Nothing huge has happened so far in the offseason. Hopefully that will change pretty soon. But like I said, look forward to the episodes of kind of our wishes for the offseason and going over our preseason predictions to see how we did. Spoiler, we didn't do great on a lot of stuff, but we'll go over all that. And as always, thanks for listening. This has been It's a Bronx Story. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks. You can check us out on Twitter and Instagram at The Bronx Story.
Let's go, Yankees. Do something.
Drill deep to right field. Grossman looking up. See ya. It's a tie game. Brett Gardner ties it with a home run to right field. 4-4.